Hey, Lean Hogs closed higher, but it looks like the buying may have been exhausted and corn closed lower. But there's a chance that the selling was exhausted. All I know is the markets are set up for some big potential moves into the second half of the week.
Live from beneath the embattled Midwest via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we feature a conversation with pro farmers, captains of cognition, senior market analyst Jeff Wilson and editor Brian Grady. And then right after the news from Standard Grain, Varsity Joe Vaklovic. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lowry.
Yeah, how you doing, Davis?
I'm a little pixely.
It sounds a little weird. Like you moved out from underneath the stairs. Get back under there, dude.
Well, the sun came out is what happened, and it burned off all my connectivity.
Is that it?
Is this thing on? Is this working?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
It is. The United States has gone past 1 million confirmed cases of COVID-19.
Okay.
But yesterday's new cases,
yeah,
was the lowest count, the lowest increase in new cases since March 30th.
Okay. Okay.
If I'm looking at the chart and I'm trying to put a little chart analysis on it, it seems to me like we are in some serious liquidation and we are making lower highs on a daily basis. And that is encouraging for the direction that that we need to be headed in the country right now. So Okay. Everything's moving along real good. Hey, we've got a little bit of fresh news or fresher news that I want to get to before get to Joe. So let's get to the what was moving markets around today.
Sure thing. Well, wheat ended with gains on support from deteriorating crop conditions. Winter wheat rated good to excellent slipped 3 points from last week to 54%. Also, wheat rated poor to very poor increased 2 points to 15%. Also, limiting selling interest in wheat futures are concerns about dry conditions in Europe and Russia's restrictions on export sales in an effort to maintain an adequate domestic supply. July hard red winter wheat was 4.25 cents higher at 483.75. July soft red firmed 1.25 cents to close at 526. July spring wheat firmed 5.25 cents to 514. Chip.
Yeah, watch Western Europe in general because they're anticipating some rains. I don't think they've gotten them yet, but we need to keep a close eye on that.
Corn planting as of April 26 hit 27% complete. That's well ahead of the five-year average pace of 20% planted. Most impressive is Iowa at 39% complete and Minnesota 40% done with corn planting. USDA says corn planting is ahead of the five-year average pace in 11 of the top 18 corn-growing states. Much of the pressure on nearby corn prices today was tied to demand destruction from the ethanol industry. May corn futures were 2.75 cents lower at 302.75. July corn slipped 1.25 cents to 312. December corn closed at 330, up 0.5 cent on the day.
Yeah, in 1 week, Iowa planted like 5.2 million acres of corn. Minnesota planted like 3.3 million. Illinois was a very impressive number, up again 29 points in the week. But man, oh man, Minnesota gained 39 points. Iowa gained 37 points. It was an impressive week in the middle of the country.
Bean plantings as of Sunday were double the five-year average pace and hit 8% done. The quicker than normal start to the planting season is limiting buying interest in bean futures. Also, traders continue to point to a lack of export demand for soybeans, especially from China, as a source of pressure on soybean prices. New lows in the Brazilian currency is keeping China focused on purchasing beans from that country. May bean futures were 3 cents lower at 826. July beans fell 4.5 cents to 832. November 2020 bean futures closed at 839. Chip, that's down 1.25 cents today.
Okay, on the meat side, let's jump over to that. Trump, This is according to Bloomberg. This story was filed by Jennifer Jacobs at about 11:15 this morning, Central Time. Headline, Trump to order U.S. meat plants to stay open amid pandemic. President Donald Trump plans to order meat processing plants to remain open as the nation confronts growing food supply disruptions from the coronavirus outbreak, a person familiar with the matter said. Trump plans to use the Defense Production Act to order the companies to stay open as critical infrastructure, and the government will provide additional protective gear for employees as well as guidance, according to the person. The order sets the stage for a showdown. Let's see. Let's go over to this. Trump signaled the executive action at the White House on Tuesday, saying he planned to sign an order aimed at Tyson Foods, Inc.'s liability, which had become a roadblock for the company. He did not elaborate on that. The order, though, will not be limited to Tyson, the person said. It will affect many processing plants supplying beef, chicken, eggs, and pork. Shares in Tyson and poultry producer Sanderson Farms extended gains after the news. All right.
Okay.
All go right. forward.
Well, speaking of which, boxed beef prices surged another $4 yesterday afternoon and pushed another $15 higher this morning. Heavyweight choice graded beef boxes are now priced at nearly $327 per hundredweight. June live cattle were 65 cents higher, $84.70. August cattle firmed 12.5 cents, $19.52.5. And May feeders were up 35 cents to $118.50. And on the snout side, after short covering pushed lean hog futures up the expanded daily trading limit, selling interest re-entered the market to erase most of today's gains. June lean hogs 92.5 cents higher, 56.20. July hogs jumped a $1.82.5 to $60.25. Chip, last time we talked to Brian Grady, weren't lean hogs lock limit up in the morning show?
You know, they might have been. Yeah, yeah.
I recall that, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Joe Vaklavic, Standard Grain. Joe, there's vinyl all over the floor the way that this box beef market is smashing records.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the details of this executive order are going to be. You've got to think to yourself that it's a good thing. What sort of processing capacity is their goal? Do they want to get back to 100? Do they want to get back to somewhere close to that? I mean, you've got to think that that's a positive. But it could take a little bit longer than you'd like it to, I guess.
Yeah, and we do have to remember that it is skilled workers that are in place. It's not like you can just throw any Joe off the street. I shouldn't have said any Joe. Excuse me, Joe. anybody off the street into that position and put them to work. So we've got to remember that.
I don't think you can just take the National Guard and throw them in there and suit them up and have them go at it. It's more complicated than that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The corn market came within a quarter of a cent of that 301 low. What do you make of it?
Ethanol is the problem. We all know that. We need some sort of sign that that situation is bottomed, whether it be lower stocks, better weekly output. I think we're still the worst may still be in front of us.
That's no good. Are we making too big of a deal? Yeah, I hope you are too. Are we making too big of a deal out of some of the dry conditions over in Europe for the wheat market?
Yeah, probably. We don't have a shortage of wheat. There's no big crop problem. The stocks to use ratio globally is like the highest ever. I think if anything, you've got logistics issues and countries worried about food security that could disrupt it a little bit. But I don't know if I see the story outside of that.
Yeah, this disruption to the supply chain here and around the world. We're going to figure out just how comfortable and how secure the world really has decided they are on the food side of things.
Yep, that's right.
Yep. All right, Joe. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep, see you, Jip. Bye.
All right, that's Joe Vaklavic, Standard Grain. Coming up, we're going to talk to the guys from Pro Farmer. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, Pro Farmer senior market analyst Jeff Wilson. Up next, right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk!
AgriTalk!
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Yeah, we're talking to the guys from Pro Farmer today, so give us a holler, 855-482-5524, or you can tweet at us, and when you do, include hashtag AgriTalk in the message. That way I'll be sure to see it. We got Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. We've got Pro Farmer senior market analyst Jeff Wilson joining us. I'll start with Jeff. Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
Great, Chip. How are you today?
I'm okay. I'm okay. We've got a lot of ground to cover. We've got Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. And, Brian, when we talked on the morning show in Markets Now, lean hog futures were like $5.50 higher. We gave up a lot of those gains. What happened there?
Well, I think, you know, we've been on the string of gains, and you just have to back off a little bit. The premium that the futures are trading to the cash index at some point in time comes into play, and I think it definitely came into play today.
Okay. The word that President Trump is planning to use the Defense Production Act to order the meat plants to stay open. Do you think that that would have had the opposite impact on the hog market? It would have locked it up even more, because while pork demand is solid, if we're going to force the plants to stay open or find some way to keep those plants open, Jeff, wouldn't that increase the demand for the hogs?
Sure. I think it was one of those situations where it was buy the rumor, sell the fact.
Okay.
I think the rumors were around early on. That's what drove us sharply higher in both cattle and hogs early on. And then when the news hit the newswire tapes, it was like, okay, now everybody knows, let's sell it, and let's wait and see how quickly this plan becomes an action and becomes, we really see the slaughter come up. I mean, the story is we only slaughtered 76,000 cattle and 283,000 hogs today. I mean, those are some of the lowest numbers I've seen on a non-holiday in forever. I mean, I don't know what it would have been 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
I mean, those are just, I mean, we're talking about a 60% slaughter rate in hogs, and that's what, 30% lower in cattle.
Right.
So
it's
a problem.
Well, it's a huge problem. And like you said, Brian, during the break there, is the issue now is if we do see President Trump use the Defense Production Act to keep the slaughterhouses open, you've still got to get the workers to show up to work.
That's right. And I think the thing now is going to be their safety from their personal perspective, how much, you know, personal protection equipment they can get, what their working conditions will be like, with, you know, how far apart they'll be spaced on the lines, those types of things. So the executive order keeps the doors open. It doesn't mean that necessarily that there will be an increase in workload at the plants, because that is dependent on the individual worker showing up.
Yep, we've been talking about it for a long time already. It seems like a long time already. It's that the worker right now, it's the coronavirus infections or the fear of being infected with the coronavirus that is keeping the workers out of the plants. We need to give them the confidence that right now it is clean, and that when they walk in that place, they're not going to walk out sick. And it's we need to get rid of the fear of that as well. It's not just, we need to give them the confidence that they can get back in there and get to work. And there's such, it's amazing, Jeff. People are learning about the supply chain, and it's forced education in a lot of cases, isn't it, man?
Right, and I think the packing plants are working to get to that position where they can build up that confidence in their workers and bring those people back. I mean, you're reading about these states that are trying to come back, opening up restaurants in some of these, Texas, one of the biggest restaurant operations in the states, you know, like almost 10% of total restaurant sales are in Texas. They're reopening, so that's good news. So there's and you got packer margins at over $700 per head, and pig margins at $76 a head. There's a huge financial incentive there to get it done. Let's hope that these companies want to stay in business and want to, you know, keep the producer in business.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah. And swinging over to the beef side of things here, Brian, let's see. We only had movement this morning of 58 loads, but choice heavyweight boxes were up $15.04, $326.88. Select heavyweight boxes pushed over $300 and got to $315.57. eye-popping numbers, Beej.
Yeah, record prices, record, Jeff mentioned it, but record Packer profit margins. I think what we're seeing, this is a second wave. If you remember, this happened in a smaller scale earlier yep. on when we couldn't get the meat into retail outlets. And, you know, the same type of thing's happening now, you know, slaughter rates dropping off so dramatically. You know, we have meat in storage. It's a matter of and you've talked about this, but the supply chain is just broken at this point in time. And, you know, USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue continues to say that we have the supplies. He's factually correct on that. We do have supplies. It's a matter of getting them to where the consumer can use them. And, you know, here in Cedar Falls, Iowa, I can walk into our local Hy-Vee, Fairway, whatever the store is, Walmart, and I can buy basically anything I want to buy from the meat case. That isn't the case in the higher population areas outside of where it's produced, where the supply chain has to work to get it into those locations. And you know, just even talking to some folks down in the St. Louis area, they're experiencing lower volumes in the meat case and things like that. That isn't happening here locally.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, okay, we keep the doors open. We got to get them showing up because the demand for beef is coming back. Jeff, how much of this demand and this push up to record highs in the box beef is there? Number one to you, Jeff, is there meat flowing and poultry, pork, beef? Is there meat flowing out of cold storage now? And how much is the anticipation that we are going to start to reopen some of the restaurants playing into the surge in beef prices?
Well, the restaurants aren't going to order any meat until they know they feel right. comfortable opening, right? I mean, you're not going to operate if you can only have 20% capacity. You just can't make any money doing that. So yeah. it's going to take a while for that demand to come back into play. But slowly, if you get the slaughtering operations going, you get the restaurants coming back on, and people feel more comfortable going out to eat. But you know, the bottom line is people are eating well at home. I think, you know, the prices haven't necessarily got completely out of line at the supermarkets relative to what the prices we're seeing at the wholesale level. There's a little more of a lag. You know, a lot of supermarkets buy on moving average based, you know, weekly load counts. So they're not getting, you know, gouged as much as if you had to buy a spot load right now and pay these kind of record prices. So the story going forward is, you know, just keep the meat moving. You know, yeah. the price will come down if you can get the meat moving again. And I think the consumer, I mean, the thing I was looking at today, there's an ETF, XRT. It's retail, shows all the different retailers, okay? Mm-hmm. It is having its best month. The stock prices are having their best month in, I think it's like 10 years since right after. So that's telling you the consumer wants to spend. If he's yep. given a chance and he feels safe, he is going to spend, he or she is going to spend money. And part of that is making sure, you know, we found out after the 2009 problem yep. that they'll go for big, high-cost food items. You know, they'll still go buy their Starbucks at $7 a cup. And but they're going to also buy steaks and they're going to yep. buy pork loins. And, you know, the thing is, that's a good story that's developing. It's going to take time. You know, it's not something that's going to happen overnight.
Right. It is going to take time. And the other thing that takes time, evidently, Beej, is getting some of these record box beef prices, the strength in the pork product market, down through the supply chain and back to the farm, because these prices on cattle kind of suck.
Yeah, the packer margin versus the cash price right now is a major one. But keep in mind, I mean, that at these margins, the slaughter plant will kill as many as they can. They just yep. can't kill them right now, and that's yep. the issue. So we have to get the slaughter plants up and running. We have to have them fully staffed, and that's the first step in the process here. Right. you're going to see some really weird stuff happen in the differentials between the cash market and the products and those types of things continue until we get back to normal. And who knows how long that's going to take.
Exactly. All right. We are talking with Pro Farmers Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson. When we come back, we've got to get an update on something that isn't exactly market related, but it is revenue related. Ties into some of the government aid that is coming out in the response to the COVID-19 crisis. We'll get an update on what Peterson thinks of Purdue next. It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers. First thing today, Fed meeting begins today. No interest rate changes are expected. Ethanol sector still pushing for aid. Ethanol advocates are urging President Donald Trump to provide aid. Pro Farmer crop consultant Dr. Michael Cordonier is leaning down on U.S. corn acres and up on soybeans. Business as usual at Brazilian ports, at least for now. The volume of grain exports is actually higher compared to last year. Dry weather raising eyebrows in Western Europe. The Senate and House will return on May 4th. Lawmakers will return next Monday after the extended recess amid the coronavirus pandemic. Detroit automakers are targeting May 18th to resume some production at U.S. factories, and Iowa leaders are urging aid for hog culling. Check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to Pro Farmer. Make that try, profarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Farm on, hashtag farm on. Capital F, capital O, and one word. Give us a picture. Give us a look at what it means to you to farm on Twitter. Include hashtag farm on. Or you can send a picture, message, include a little bit of information, some where you're at, what you're up to, and text that image to 31313 with the message farm on. Okay, we are talking to Brian and Jeff today from Pro Farmer. Before we get back to that, let's go ahead and get a recap of how the markets closed, Davis.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat was 4.25 cents higher at 483.75. July soft red firmed 1.25 cents to close at 526. May corn futures were 2.75 cents lower at 302.75. December corn closed at 330. Excuse me, that's up 0.5 cent on the day. May soybean futures were 3 cents lower at 826. Novi beans closed at 839, down 1.25 cents today. On the livestock side, June live cattle 65 cents higher, 84.70, and May feeders were up 35 cents, 118.50. And June lean hogs 92.5 cents higher, 56.20. There's your quick market recap. Back to you, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady does more than watch the markets. He watches what's going on with policy, works very closely with Jim Wiesmeyer, the Pro Farmer policy analyst. And what is I see Jim's headline on one of his updates, abolish Ag Committee in House and Senate if CCC stipulations not met. That's coming from House Ag Chairman Colin Peterson out of Minnesota. What is going on?
Well, he's mad. He's upset. He doesn't like how Sonny Perdue handled the farmer aid and specifically the CCC, use of CCC funding. So it's a turf battle, basically, is what it comes down to. He thinks that the Ag committees should have more say in terms of the use of the CCC funding and USDA less, that's the bottom line on it.
Okay. Yeah, and the one comment in there about how these disaster aid programs are really becoming the new farm bill or the new safety net in there. There is some truth to that, Brian, how the with what's going on in the grain markets with corn under the reference price. I mean, and we've got LDPs going on in cotton. The safety net should be allowed to work, shouldn't it?
It should. You know, so there is some of that. But, you know, the CCC is being used for the disaster funding and stuff. So I think that both sides of the story are somewhat correct or have some factual data behind them. Yeah. It's just that the snapshot things that are coming out right now, it's pretty easy to nitpick on things.
Sure.
There's never going to be a program that or safety net or this disaster aid or anything like that fits everyone perfectly. What you have to try to do, I think, is get it to fit as well as possible for the most. And there are some discrepancies, obviously, that need to be addressed. And we'll see where it goes. But right now it's a turf battle. And Peterson feels like his turf's being invaded.
Well, get back on your turf. And they're all coming back. They're all coming back on May 4th is what it sounds like. Jeff, I was talking about the hashtag farm on that Farm Journal social media campaign that is going on. They farmed on in Iowa and Minnesota last week, didn't they? Good grief, that corn planting progress was wow.
And Illinois. They're all up over 29 percentage points for the week.
Yeah.
And you got to kind of put it in a little bit of perspective. I mean, relatively speaking, we're still behind 2017 and 2016 planting pace for this time of the year. But it was a great week. And we had some rain around. And just think of it had been a dry, warm week last week instead of cold, dry, a little wet in some areas. Maybe we would have got 50% of the crop in the ground as of last Sunday. So it just shows you how efficient and how productive U.S. farmers are, and they're doing their job right now to farm on and put the crop in the ground and see what may happen.
Yeah, with as much progress as we're seeing, because some of the states, Minnesota, Iowa, basically double the five-year average planting pace right now. Is it locking in the 97 million acres that are intended to be planted to corn this year, or is that number still kind of up for grabs?
Well, it's not going any higher than that number.
Okay.
Whether it comes down, you know, people thinking it might come down 4 or 5 million. I don't think that's probably going to happen. But it could, you know, we could take 1 million, 2 million off that number. But you're still going to have, I mean, the whole story is that, you know, you get the crop in the ground early and you have some soil moisture there and you don't have any heat this summer, you're going to look at some pretty good yields this year. And right now, you know, the forecasters are, you know, saying there's a warm risk, but not a hot risk this summer. I guess the thing that worries me most is, can these crops make it to maturity? You know, we got this sunspot situation where we're at really low levels, and it might have some colder than normal weather when we get into the, you know, when the crop starts to mature in August and September. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying there's higher risk of that. But right now, everything's going in, and the market right now is going to anticipate you're going to have pretty good yields.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
they're proving it wrong.
Right. Right. And, Beads, you got to assume at least trendline yields for both corn and soybeans at this point, like Jeff said, until proven wrong.
Well, at this point, you always pencil in. I mean, no matter what the year, you always pencil
in. I was backing it off a year ago by now, I'll admit.
Well,
I was.
Yeah, and that turned out to be right. But I think, and then you adjust for the extreme. And last year was an extreme. So, but you adjust moving forward. But, as we sit here, at the end of April, I think you assume that there will be a trend line yield. And then if the weather happens to be favorable moving forward, then you adjust it up. If it turns dry, then you probably back it down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go on to strategy. When you take a look at what's going on in these markets, Jeff, do you feel any urgency to make moves on 2020 crop?
Well, I think you have to be very cognizant of the fact we could have big crop and growing, you know, stocks to use ratio for corn. So rallies are probably, you know, meant to be sold until proven otherwise. You got to get something sold out there in the new crop. You know, we closed at 330 in December corn. You know, if you can, any type of rally of 10, 15, 20 cents, probably is an opportunity to get some sales in place and in the beans. What scares me about beans looking out into next year is the Brazilian real has just cratered since January 1. It's down 40%. And historically, when the Brazilian real has that kind of depreciation against the U.S. dollar, it bodes ill for U.S. soybean prices the following year because there's such a huge financial incentive for Brazilian farmers to plant road to road, not fence row to fence row, down there just because the fields are so big. So I guess that's a concern. So rallies, you know, right now. And, you know, the other part, we got this feed demand problem with animals being euthanized. We have problems with biofuel demand. The crush margin has traded from close to $1.40 back in late March to now it's only 75 cents today. That's not a good situation there either, even though we've been crushing meal at a record pace and we have less DDGs to feed the animals. It's still a situation that, you know, we have to have demand improve. The funds are big shorts in corn. They're modest, very small shorts in beans, but you got to have some sort of fundamental reason for them to want to A, get out of the shorts and corn, and B, want to get long some beans. And that probably is going to require big Chinese purchases in the old crop and start booking that new crop.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that what it takes, Brian? Some export demand and specifically from China to be a fundamental catalyst to get the shorts covered in corn?
Yeah, if you're talking about specifically that, I think wheat actually has the most bullish case by far. You know, there's some potential there with exporters slowing down their shipments, importing countries wanting to build their reserves. Some areas, obviously, you know, in Europe and the Black Sea region that are dry. Uncertainties with the U.S. Winter wheat crop, specifically the HRW crop because of the freeze and everything. So I think that wheat has the potential to pull corn higher. But if you're just singling it out and saying, hey, what are the factors that could get corn? It'd probably be Chinese demand coming in and just being an active buyer through the process here.
Okay, Beej, not a whole lot of time, but enough time to go over what you think might need to be done in cattle or hogs. Anything with urgency on the risk management?
Well, there is downside risk. You know, I think that if we get the hogs too far in front of the cash here, downside protection with hedges is probably needed. The risky thing is it's just such an volatile environment right now that, you know, if you're not locking in profitable levels, which we know isn't the case, then, you know, it becomes just extreme risk at that point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Jeff, thanks for making the time this afternoon. Really appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Take care.
All right. That's Jeff Wilson, Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst. Brian, thanks, man. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
All right. You betcha.
All right. That is Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady. When we come back, Davis and I've got a couple of highlights from that conversation that I want to pull out. And I also want to take a closer look at the crop progress and crop condition report that we got from USDA yesterday afternoon.
Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at #AgriTalk.
Welcome back. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Yo.
Wrapped up the conversation there with Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer. They both made a very good point when we talked about the Defense Production Act order from President Trump to keep the packing houses open. Both of them said, yeah, we can keep the doors open, but it doesn't mean that the workers are going to walk through it. It's very true, and it's what we've been talking about on AgriTalk for a long time already, Davis. Those workers must be confident that they can go to work and not walk out of the building sick. That it's just imperative. And whatever it takes to provide them with the protection that they need so that they can have the confidence to walk in there, needs to be provided. It needs to be provided. Now, do you think this is the right move for President Trump to order this?
I don't know how to feel about it. Because when you talk about the safety concerns, it's not just for the workers themselves. Mm-hmm. We know that there's a certain segment of that labor force who are living in multi-generational households where maybe sure. you've got grandma there and maybe you've also got babies there under the same right. roof. Right. You know, some of the most susceptible groups to this virus here. And so, mm-hmm. of course, they're going to need a whole lot of confidence. But of course, you got to weigh that against a paycheck. I don't know if they're making money staying home. Can they get unemployment from all this? I guess I don't know. I would assume so.
I would assume so as well. I'm not exactly sure on that, but
you can't just refuse to go to work and then say, "Well, right. now I need an unemployment check." I don't
exactly.
think it works that way.
And the thing is, as far as I can tell, the Packers are encouraging workers that are sick or feel that they might be exhibiting symptoms or that they have even been exposed to the COVID-19 virus to stay mm-hmm. home.
Right.
Stay home, and that they will get paid. Because staying home is that important if you are sick.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been encouraging that. But, of course, this is going to be politicized.
Well, yeah.
President Trump, and I'll admit, I haven't had much time to put my thoughts together on this. But President Trump is going to be called all kinds of names for doing this, Davis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And you've got Stuart Applebaum, president of the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union, coming right out and saying, well, we only wish that this administration cared as much about the lives of working people as it does about meat, pork, and poultry products. Well, the last time I checked, meat, pork, and poultry products feed the lives of many, many working people around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you can go both ways on that, Stuart. It just seems, you know, when you start off with, we only wish that this administration cared.
Right.
You know, right. It's a political statement right out the gate.
Well, okay.
It has nothing to do about the workers, is Stuart's comment.
That's exactly right. Now, imagine had Trump decided, you know what, I'm not going to do anything here. We're just going to let the situation work it out. Well, now he's a super creep for not doing anything. He wants the nation to starve to death, this guy. What's the matter with him? I bet Trump had supper tonight. Enjoy your Wellington, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It just...
Exactly. Now, Wilson pointed it out, when you've got record, by far records, after today's, Davis, I mean, yesterday I said it was probably going to be in the 710 to 750 range. I put a mm-hmm. wide range on it because I didn't know what the afternoon trade was going to do, and the afternoon trade put on $4 instead of doubling in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. If it would have doubled, it might have been to 750. We're probably looking at packer margins close to $800 a head on beef now.
Can we make the leap from packer margins to their ability to make payroll, even if they're not
because it comes to volume. You're not making the $800 if you ain't killing the beef.
I got you. Okay, that
so
makes sense.
That's the incentive.
Mm-hmm.
That's the incentive. That's where the money should be coming from to pay for the PPE,
right?
To give those workers the confidence to get it into those meat plants and get the job done. I feel bad for them, dude. I mean,
I do too.
You know, in many ways, for the first time, these workers from outside of the farming community, mm-hmm. from outside mm-hmm. of the farming community are being noticed. Now, the farming community has noticed those packing house workers for a mm-hmm. long time, and especially the livestock producers. And the level of respect that livestock producers have for those guys in the packing houses, and I keep saying guys, for those workers, for those people, whatever, because it's not just guys, quote unquote. But for those people inside of the packing houses, the level of respect from farmers to them has always, as far as I can tell, has always been, you know, adequate, has been significant, whatever the word is.
Yeah.
Most consumers don't even know that they were there until now. Until now. And how they respond is going, how workers respond to this is going to play a big role in forming opinions of consumers. Now, does that consumer opinion matter? It may or may not. We don't know.
Yeah.
Boy, this is all interesting stuff. At the start of this, when we were talking about if you just sit back and observe what's going on around you, it's amazing how much you can learn. Well, I started using forced learning because you don't have to sit back and you know, observe it. It's being shot at you with a fire hose now.
Right.
All the challenges that we face throughout the industry.
There's UFOs now, too. So
okay.
Maybe we can talk about that tomorrow.
Good. For Davis and for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening. Tomorrow morning, Farmer Forum. Tim from Iowa, Michelle from Montana, Arlen Suderman tomorrow afternoon.